Welcome to the McGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James. You can go to our website and check out all of our previous multiple hundreds of episodes. Our most recent one was about The Social Network, which we did an audio podcast and a video podcast about, because as it is very clear in both those podcasts, I fucking love that movie. I'm also probably going to write something about Adele and Bieber and a little bit about Shia LaBeouf that'll be out on Monday. And yeah, we'll be talking about Star Wars at some point, because I think we're all culturally obligated on December 18th to talk about Star Wars for approximately 2 weeks.
Okay.
So yeah, theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right, James.
Yep, Star Wars, right?
Star Wars. We're starting it now. Blind anticipation.
No, we're not.
How long do you think the IMDb trivia page for Star Wars The Force Awakens is right now? Like, is it longer than Moby Dick?
Yes. Shut up. Let's talk about a different movie.
Okay. I'm on board.
Let's talk about Creed.
Okay, I could do that.
Okay.
I don't know
how'd you feel about Creed?
I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, at times, I think I liked it more than I should have, but I don't know. It's just kind of like there are now three good Rocky movies, and this is one of them, and I've just sort of found that I like movies about sad Rocky a lot. And,
yeah. What's the other good Rocky movie?
One and Six.
Six, okay.
Yeah, which I know is
one,
not.
Obviously, yes.
Yeah, exactly. One, and I've made this point on the podcast before, its quality has been dampened by just how influential it has been in the many years following. Yeah. Just because, we've seen so many movies that follow the same Rocky formula now, because that movie was so good and at the time pretty inventive, you know? So,
yeah. It's like the Seinfeld's not funny thing.
Yeah, I suppose so. Except Seinfeld is funny.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a fighter, but I'll fight anybody that says otherwise.
Okay. Yeah, we do get some sad Rocky here, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's of one of my critiques of one of the positive things about Rocky Balboa, I said, is that they eliminated one of the most annoying characters in Adrian, who died. And they eliminated the other most annoying character in this one, Polly. Also died. Yeah. And so that gives Rocky like a sadness that I think is always important to me in liking Rocky and just in general, the movies being good. Yeah. And it's not like he's not sad in over various points of the other movies, but they're also so much further removed from a certain reality that I think is very present in one six in this one as well.
Yeah, and I think he has said in some interviews how this is kind of another reflection of where he is in his life. And, he gets this chance with the Rocky franchise, which is how so many of us met Sly Stallone to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he said it with 5 and 6 and 7, seven being Creed that we're talking about today. He kind of just gets to reflect on his film career through this lens of the Rocky character that he created. Mm-hmm. And I think, I always love that kind of stuff. I think that's really interesting. And there's some sad parts to this movie. And sometimes the more you know with Stallone, there are certain beats in these movies that just become even sadder because of that. Mm-hmm. In this one, especially when he's talking about how his son has moved off to Vancouver and they mm-hmm. kind of just live separate lives now. Mm-hmm. In between Rocky Balboa and Creed, Rocky 6 and 7, Sage Stallone, his Sly's son, killed himself. Mm-hmm. And, it just brings this weight to it. And within this movie, we see him reflecting on Adrian's failed chemotherapy and mm-hmm. death when he gets diagnosed, and then along with his diagnosis, kind of looking death in the face and kind of taking an assessment of his whole life. And it really, it's a heavy movie. I think that there's very fun and funny parts to this movie too, but. Mm-hmm. that's part of what made One so successful too, is that it's not as much of a sports movie. It is a character piece, or, you know, just a heavy drama that happens to have a couple sports sequences in it.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned Sage Stallone with Rocky's son. Another thing that kind of adds some sadness to that is, like, the whole plot of Rocky Balboa is built around making his son sort of, or helping, you know, he wants to get closer to his son. And at the end of the movie, that kind of happens. And then to see that that didn't hold, you know, like, I think that adds another layer of sadness, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because it's been nine years since that movie, assuming they're following, you know, the timeline that we are.
Yeah. And almost 40 years since the first Rocky.
Yes.
It's crazy. but it is, I mean, and again, Stallone has said this in interviews, but it is pretty remarkable that we are on the seventh of a franchise. That's not an action movie. That's not a big, you know, very spectacular kind of action-driven movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think Stallone is very much to thank for that. I think he brings, like, a humanity to Rocky that you know, I think often gets overlooked in given the way that other parts of his career have gone. You know, even when I'm mentioning to people that I'm going to see Creed, it's like, ugh, another Sly Stallone movie. I'm like, no, this is going to be one that he's good in. You know, this is I'm not going to see Daylight. You know, like, it's going to be the Stallone that you like. You just don't remember that he's so goddamn good in these movies because you've seen so much. You've seen Cobra and all these other things where he's like really playing the Stallone type of player or person that you're thinking of, you know?
Yeah, in that interview where I was talking about how he seemed kind of amazed by the ongoing success of this. I mean, no one even likes boxing anymore. And people still like a good boxing movie is because he makes them so well, you know? But what he said in the interview was that what's amazing is that this character and these stories have stayed around without any special effects, without any car chases, without blowing anything up, which is what I usually do. No bullets, no cursing, no sex scenes. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I mean, he's saying all these things and, you know, owning up to it that this is how I've spent most of my career.
Yeah.
But the things that seem to impact people the most and things that span four decades is when, you know, you just write a good movie with good characters and a good story. And I think now it's quite clear that both of us feel that Creed Rocky 7 is one of those movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about Creed a bit.
No, we're just talking about Rocky.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, you know, we've said it's the seventh. It is seemingly an attempt to be kind of a spin-off kind of reboot. You know what I mean? It's quite clearly in the same universe. We have all this overlap as time passes and human beings die, we kind of move away from, you know, Rocky 1, 2, and 3 and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we still have Stallone as Rocky Balboa. And
yeah.
And I think it is, I mean, it just has to be mentioned how many beats, you know, you said that Rocky 1 doesn't seem as good just because so many things after it have emulated it so spot on. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to see how good it is. This is so clearly in the formula of Rocky 1. It's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you ever find that was kind of detracting from it, that they hit so many of the same beats in such a similar fashion? Or do you think that this is kind of what the genre is and it's still have to do things in it properly for it to be good?
It's a bit of both, right? Because I find, like, this movie, I mean, it's so obviously a movie about legacy in general.
Yeah.
But, like, as the movie progresses, like, as it gets further along, it becomes more like a Rocky movie. Like, it really starts off with, you know, it's kind of similar to Rocky, but just in such a different environment that it looks at least different enough that you're able to not really clue into it initially. But, you know, as we're in the lead up to the Conlon fight is where it really sort of becomes just like Rocky. And I think some of the things that this movie does to set itself apart sort of give way to a more traditional style of doing this boxing movie. And that's where I think the movie becomes less engaging for me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Near the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It, I mean, it, it is kind of an inversion. I mean, when we meet Rocky in the first one, he's, you know, this kind of low level criminal, and, you know, kind of coming from nothing, hoping to get this, where in this one, I mean, we see, I mean, in a way he's boxing royalty, you know, Creed with Apollo being his father. And second, I mean, he has a good job. It's about him walking away from a good job and kind of, you know, seemingly stepping down to boxing. You know, they say no one rich gets into boxing. So it is inverted in a way. And at the beginning, he's fighting, but he's got this other life. And in the first Rocky, we have Balboa trying to get into that life. And, you know, and even that seems to be a step up from the life of criminality and breaking people's thumbs who, you know, owe the mob money.
Yeah. Now he wants to break thumbs, like, in a legal sort of way.
Yeah, exactly. Break faces.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it is the same beats. Did you find, you know, there's kind of the Rocky checklist of things we could talk about that every Rocky seemingly has. Any of those kind of stand out to you? I mean, musically, training montage.
The first training montage I think is spectacular. The one that kind of ends with Rocky and Creed both doing the speed bag next to each other.
Yeah,
I thought
that's
montage
mostly just in the gym, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought that montage was tremendous, and then the later montage is less good, partially because they make a horrible directing decision to include some Conlon footage in there, which is clearly shot by the HBO 24/7 crew, which is the only time I will say anything negative about the HBO 24/7 documentary crew, because I think that, like, as 24/7 is just like the high point of documentary filmmaking as far as I'm concerned. And it was, I think, just sort of a last minute decision to put some Conlon footage in that montage. And I just don't think that Ryan Coogler and, you know, the first unit even shot any, you know, and that's just what they had to work with, you know? And I just think that was a huge mistake and really deadens that montage. But there's also,
because it doesn't fit together as nicely.
It doesn't fit together. There's zooms that very much fit the 24/7 aesthetic that do not fit the Creed aesthetic.
Okay.
In it. And also another part of that montage that doesn't work is just, you know, it's not all rides, you know, because you've got chemo involved in it too, right? You know, there's the part in the middle where Rocky runs to the bathroom to vomit, you know, and it's just like the montage just can't be all rides, because there's just this inherent sadness about the Rocky aspects of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, I guess that's his kind of training at this point. Like, as goofy as that sounds, that's his struggle. That's him trying to get better, just because of he's been talked into getting the chemotherapy treatments. But I see what you mean. I mean, just because those are just such pump up montages throughout the rest of the series. Right?
Exactly. And it's like, yeah, throughout the rest of the series, very much so. And and I think that's one of the things I like the most about this movie, is how weak Rocky is. But it just sort of, like, it hurts the montage that we've come to expect from Rocky. But it's not like this movie doesn't have a great Rocky montage, because it absolutely does earlier on, you know?
Yeah, no, it does. And him saying, "I used to do those push-ups one-handed."
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, that was spectacular.
I laughed pretty hard a couple times at this movie.
Yeah, even him just reading the newspaper as Creed was doing the jump rope, I thought was good too.
Yeah. Stallone's delivery on the "what cloud" line, I think, is just so good.
Well, yeah, that brings me to something I was going to ask you anyway. I imagine we'll talk more about Rocky's sadness, because it's quite pervasive in this movie. But was the, you know, this is just a much different time than when the first Rocky came out, which is the one that this movie is most similar to, is the first Rocky. And I mean, Rocky Balboa wasn't that long ago, I'm aware. It's not like that was a whole generation ago.
I mean, it's almost 10 years. I think that's 2006 at the latest.
Yeah, no, I mean, for the point that I'm about to
bring
up. But I guess, I mean, the way culture kind of moves a lot more quickly than it used to, I was really waiting for a lot of the kind of new media, kind of this movie is still for young people, because that's the demographic that you want. I mean, older people still like Rocky, but obviously they want the younger demographic, especially it seems as though they're moving forward with this as a franchise, mm-hmm. or continuing to move forward with this as a franchise. How did you feel about this movie kind of appealing to young people? And do you think they lean too heavily on the, you know, the cloud and the YouTube thing like that? Or do you think it was pretty seamless?
I think it, you know, those types of things are always obvious because anytime you see something that's like very distinctly modern, you know, like a specific phone that like Donnie's phone 2 years from now is going to look outdated, you know?
Yeah.
And anytime you show something that is modern technology, it just sort of, it becomes dated and, or sorry, it will you know, it sort of just brings a point to itself because you know it will eventually become dated and probably pretty quickly. But I think what they tried to do with that, and it worked a little bit, but I would have actually liked to see a bit more of an expansion on it, was, you know, there's a lot of talk about how Donnie throughout the movie is self-taught. You know, he kind of taught himself everything, but in the end, he still feels that he needs Rocky's guidance, right? And it's just this idea of this youthful generation being able to teach themselves so much through what we can access, like right now if we pause this podcast, you know. But also still needing some guidance from people that have actually physically done these things before. And I thought that was an interesting thing that I wish the movie had played up a little bit more.
Because it's there, but it's certainly not.
It's not there enough, yeah.
Yeah, it could have been leaned on a bit more without it feeling heavy-handed, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was good because it does kind of make sense of, you know, there could have been the scene of him and his mother, you know, digging out the old projector and the fight footage. But no, he just goes on YouTube and mm-hmm. watches it there. Mm-hmm. And I thought that sequence was good. I mean, we see him you know, fighting his father in that sequence, mm-hmm. you know, and he's got the images projected on him of Rocky. And I thought that was good. I didn't know if that was a bit too much of a gigantic visual metaphor in your face for you, but I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it worked. It was a very fine line that they stayed right on top of.
You
know?
Yeah, you can do that too much easily, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked kind of the relationship with Creed and his mother, and mm-hmm. the kind of non-existent relationship between he and his father, obviously. Mm-hmm. I thought just the idea of him being, you know, a product of infidelity was something I wasn't expecting to see or have really leaned on. Mm-hmm. And the way that it was just presented, I think wisely, just as they're watching Pardon the Interruption and talking about this. And
okay.
What?
I just want to make a point about the Pardon the Interruption. So at this point, Felicia Rashad, Creed's, Donnie's mother, is alone in her home with her cleaning lady and watching Pardon the Interruption. Like, just regardless, like, it's just weird because, you know, Pardon the Interruption's on at like, what, 5:30? So even if she just left ESPN on from earlier, what was she watching at 4 p.m. on ESPN? You know, it just doesn't really feel like Creed's mom is watching darts on a Thursday afternoon, you know?
He's a boxing fan.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah. Actually, you know what? You probably would get a 4 p.m. Boxing match on ESPN, but I feel like she wouldn't be watching boxing because I think she makes it pretty clear.
Yeah, she's had enough boxing for her lifetime, it seems. Yeah.
Another little quick ESPN thing that I got a kick out of in this movie is when they show the weigh-in where Conlon breaks whatever the other guy's jaw is that leads to Creed being able to get the fight, is that the ticker shows a score for a Warriors-Clippers game, and the Warriors just blow out the Clippers, which I thought was pretty funny. It really seemed like the person in charge of that was a Warriors fan, because they have like a really, like, they're my favorite rivalry in the NBA right now, and I thought that was pretty funny.
That was probably the last thing they put in. It might be a very current score.
Yeah, yes. I haven't looked up if it was a real game, but normally those games are close, so...
I was just getting at just that they were kind of very frank about it, and they said, yeah, mm-hmm. it's an athlete, it's a boxer, you know, this isn't crazy. And it wasn't you know, it didn't seem too mean-spirited or anything to me, or exploitative in any way, but it was just kind of handled realistically and not you know, a bunch of people flipping out about how could, you know, it just I thought they played that one very quickly, but not flippantly. I don't know. There's something I enjoyed about that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think you could say part like they chose "Pardon the Interruption" as the show instead of "First Take," where it's just Skip Bayless and screaming at each other. You know, like at least PTI is smart people doing a dumb show. You know, like so there's at least that level of grace to it. Yeah, no, I would agree, and I definitely thought about that a bit specifically because they are using people that would address this as an actual news topic and a show that I recognize, and just being like, wow, like just thinking about other sort of similar situations that could happen and then the way that they would be experienced by the people involved. And I thought that was it was kind of interesting and obviously something that I wasn't totally blind to. Like all of these sports stories that I follow obviously have some real life tie-ins in some capacity, but it was kind of interesting to see it through that lens. And specifically to see Felicia Rashad seeing it, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought that whole story was good too, about him, you know, being very reluctant to fight under his father's name and things like that. That was obviously one of the key components of this movie, but I think it was done well. But yeah, I mean, to your point about it being, you know, realistic, that is something I have enjoyed very much about the Rocky franchise. It's not so present in the first one, but you know, Jim Lampley and you know, the real people,
Max
who do,
Kellerman.
yeah, exactly, all the real people who do sports and do boxing and stuff.
Michael Buffer. Does anybody have a better career than Michael Buffer? Like, is there a career that you would more like to have for the next 40 years of your life than Michael Buffer's? Like, you work 4 days a year and get paid very well for it, and all you have to do is own one tux.
And meet a bunch of celebrities every time they make a movie where you play yourself and do the same thing, but I guess probably get a bigger paycheck. Who
Exactly.
knows? Yeah, I'm fully on board with him.
Yeah. Everybody's a Michael Buffer fan.
Is it time to talk about the first fight? Or I mean, not the first fight. I guess that would be the one in the gym.
Well,
when he loses his stang.
No, the first fight is the one in Tijuana.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Which I enjoy the setup for that. And I really enjoy after he knocks the guy down. You could see him standing in the background. There's a lot of like good full frame photography in this movie, where you know there's somebody out of focus in the background that's doing something, and they don't necessarily need to be the focus of the shot, but you can just see that they're there, and it kind of adds something, you know. And in that shot, right after he knocks down his opponent, Donnie, like before the 10 count is anywhere near done, is ripping the tape off of his gloves with his mouth. And I love that so much.
He's got to get back to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I do like the cut back to him at his desk, too.
Yes.
Especially because we don't really have a read on that element of the story yet because it's so early on.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was good. But I was getting at kind of the what seems to be the most, well, I imagine will go down as the most remarkable fight of the movie is the one done in one take.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, that's really good, right?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, you might be able to elucidate a bit more on it, but I just so much stuff at face level too, and I think so much of this movie is about, you know, as we said, it's not so much about the fighting, but at the kind of the more personal elements and you know facing your past, facing who you really are. But then we kind of get those swoops down to, you know, when he's in the corner and looking down at, you know, his managers and things like that. And just the amount of choreography to go between the fighters and all around them. And it's, yeah, I thought that was just so well put together. I guess the cinematographer is saying that everyone thinks they cheated, but it's really, that really is one take. It, you know, they filmed it 12 times and used the 10th one, but it's just, it's so well put together, and it just looks so great on the on film. And I mean, there are other fights in, you know, boxing movie history, like Raging Bull and some of the things that they did to make the ring look bigger or smaller that had all its artistic merit. But from a purely visceral level, I don't think anything beats this fight, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I was trying to think of it because I think Raging Bull kind of has to stand on its own because it's not even trying to be in any capacity realistic. It's, I mean, it's just kind of the gold standard for showing a boxing match because it's the boxing match that's so artful and weird, you know. I just,
yeah.
I, So I think it just has to stay out of the conversation. And I was trying to think about other boxing movies that I've really enjoyed the boxing in. Like, I think Ali does a really good job of showing boxing. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think this... I mean, I can't think of a boxing match in a movie that I enjoy more, specifically because it also ties in a lot of my long-held opinions about cinematography, and that long takes are wonderful and always do long takes, you know? Yeah. But yeah, and the amount
Warners.
Of... Yeah, exactly. The amount of moves required for the camera, the Steadicam op in that shot is really unbelievable. And how you get, you know, the round with the two boxers, and then we get to go to the corners and then come back to the fight. And then when the fight's over, as Rocky and Bianca are coming into the ring, and Bianca like gives a Elaine Benes push to Creed, which I really enjoy. It's just like, it's not even just the whole fight in the shot. It's that you see that whole scene in one shot, you know, you see the celebration too. And I, like, when the fight was over, I was like, oh my God, that was amazing. And now they're going to cut and have a conversation in the corner or something about how cool that was. They just don't. They just have that conversation still in the take. And I think one of the things that kind of gets overlooked about shots like this, where there are so many complex things, like Michael B. Jordan and the Steadicam operator's first name is Ben, but I can't remember his last name. and the other boxer, they have all the most complicated stuff to do. But, you know, you look at someone like Sly Stallone that has three very important cues that he has to hit. And you've got somebody like Bianca that has 2.5 minutes of watching most of this stuff. And I think she shouts out at one point during the shot before the end of the match. And then she still has to hit her cue at the very end. And like, if she doesn't, then all of the things that they've just nailed are for nothing, you know? And I think there's obviously the most important aspects of the shot are the people that are in the ring the most, but there's an intense pressure on everybody involved in a shot like that. And I think it's very impressive, and the shot's amazing.
Yeah. And even, I mean, Ben, our camera operator there, his movement has to be just as complicated as the fighters around him while carrying something, while looking through something, you know, like he's just a third person in that fight, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Apparently he actually did like some boxing training so he could understand how to best move around boxers, which I found pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's great.
Another thing I really liked about that movie, I mean, or sorry, that shot. I mean, this movie in general uses the Steadicam really well. It seems like for the majority of the movie, even a lot of static shots are just shot on a Steadicam. Because, you know, there's a little bit of movement, but not enough that makes it look handheld. And I think it's interesting for a movie that's so much about legacy. I mean, we talked about this when we did a podcast on Rocky 5 years ago, that it was the first movie to really employ the Steadicam. And that's
Rocky step sequence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that this movie is so much about legacy, and the Steadicam is... It was honestly one of the most important things that Rocky introduced to filmmaking, and to see it used so much and so well in a Rocky movie 40 years later, I think it really speaks to both the legacy of the technology and the legacy of Rocky itself. And I think it's really cool that the filmmakers did so much with it. I think there are a lot of like just really good long takes in this movie that, a lot of people just wouldn't do that way, you know?
Yeah, no, it's something that came up in that interview as well. Is she's saying, we all know that this is going to be the sequence everyone remembers. This is the long take everyone remembers, but we tried to do a lot of it, and it wasn't just during action scenes, which mm-hmm. is why people don't really, you mean, people like you would notice, but for people for the most part don't notice these things because... there's not a bunch of fast-paced kind of kinetic action going on, so you're not as focused on camera movement and how they're getting all these moving things to stay in the frame like that. But
yeah, for sure.
She's, you know, it's about, you know, these kind of slower moments, and it's about these longer moments and these long, you know, these legacies, these lifetimes that go on for this long. And when you can see themes like that reflected in cinematography in often non-flashy ways, I think that... it says a lot about the people you know, putting the movie together.
Yeah, for sure. Like a good example of the use of that is when they first go to the Front Street gym, Rocky and Donnie, as they're walking into the gym, you know, we're following them up the stairs. There's no break in the shot. And we just see Rocky walking around the gym and Donnie is seeing this environment for the first time and we're sort of seeing it with him. And then he gets introduced to the cut man, the glove man, his sparring partner. And all this is done in one take. And it's, you know, there's not a lot of physical action happening, but it's, we're experiencing this environment for the first time with Donnie and kind of seeing it in a different way than he is, obviously, because we're behind him and it's a movie, you know, Donnie's not real, but, you know, it helps to further put you in the camera, the character's shoes, you know. And when I was watching this movie, I was just like, man, this, a lot of this movie shot like The Wrestler, especially like you, it's very obvious right at the first fight in Tijuana when we follow Creed out to the ring from behind center frame, like just like Aronofsky did so many shots in The Wrestler.
Yeah.
And then Black Swan as well. But it's like, man, this is really shot like The Wrestler, and that's in minute five, you know. And and then, you know, it turns out the cinematographer also shot The Wrestler.
Yeah. So
whose name is Maurice Alberti. So yes. But yeah, that was unsurprising to learn eventually. But.
Yeah. Speaking of visuals, did you like the few times we get the boxing stats on the screen when we meet a new boxer?
I hated the last time. In the Conlon fight.
Cause okay. Why is that different?
Because when we're seeing the other boxers, right? Especially in the gym in California.
Nothing about them.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that I'm fine with that is that, you know, you try and think of, well, how else would they get this information across? It would be a lot of old fashioned expositional dialogue, right?
Yeah.
We don't need to know that information about Conlon by the time Conlon's getting to the ring because it's been told to us already, because he's somebody that we have that information on already. So it just didn't need to be there. And I mean, it didn't need to be there in any other example, but at least it's providing us with new information. Like we knew that stuff about Conlon already. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that.
So that's my hot take on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. You mentioned Bianca. We had kind of passed over that pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like her? Do you like her character?
Very much. I think she's very, very good in this movie. Just likable and doesn't, like, is a character that could very easily be like Adrian and be annoying. And it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I thought it was good. I mean, she doesn't get a ton of screen time, but she's more rounded than the athlete girlfriend in these movies. Okay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this movie where Rocky's dealing with his mortality, and as we discussed early on, it seems to be Stallone dealing with his and that of the people around him.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of this this musician with the progressive hearing loss disease and kind of knowing that this is all going to be gone at some point and making the most of it, I think is a theme that works out well. And again, could be done poorly, could really be kind of ham-fisted, but they don't lean on it too hard. She does enough other things. She has enough personality that, you know, she's more than just kind of this one more metaphor, this one person to get exposition out of. It's, you know, I think something that really actually plays into the movie, which is what a character should do.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And she taught me the word John.
Oh, did you not know that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, I've listened to a lot of Philadelphia hip hop for a long time, so that was not news to me.
Yeah, I guess so. And I was reading about that term, and I guess, you know, yo Adrian and yo, the word as slang, it's not as though this wasn't anywhere before Rocky, but it is kind of credited as making it pretty mainstream and getting it to more usage outside of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And some pop linguists are predicting the same for John. So,
oh, okay.
It might be coming up now.
Well, I mean, I suppose John as a word has been around for at least 10 years.
Yeah, but it's kind of a Philly thing.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
I obviously really enjoyed that our introduction to Philadelphia comes via a Roots song. So I felt that the movie was really speaking my language at that point.
And a bridge with the word Eagles later on.
Well, yeah, that's actually a really nice shot. There's some really nice second unit shots in this movie. That one's definitely my favorite.
Oh, we didn't talk about this during training montage, but with the wheelies and the motorcycle group.
I don't even know, man. I don't even know what to say. It's just funny. It's like like DMX and the Rough Riders have been transported to from 1998 to modern Philly and are just rolling around the streets.
But is it way too silly?
It's so silly.
Okay.
But it, like, I don't know. The thing that gives it a pass for me is the last shot of that second last training montage, and when we get that cut to behind Creed running, and it's slow motion and the music drops out and it's just the person quietly singing, and then the wheelies go by him in slow motion. It's just such a gorgeous shot that I like all the silliness kind of like melts away, at least for 30 seconds. And
the wheelies, silly slow-mo wheelies.
Oh, slow-mo wheelies are dope. Especially that guy on the left that's like standing on the bike with one leg and he's holding out one arm. And really good job.
That's pretty cool.
The signs out front, the Front Street Gym, I don't know if you noticed this, but for a company threatening to tow, if you tow your car, if you park improperly, did you notice these signs?
No.
They are for Lou Bloom Towing. Louis Bloom is the name of Jake Gyllenhaal's character in Nightcrawler, and I thought that was kind of funny.
Okay.
Or Lou Bloom. Like, it has absolutely no,
yeah, not Philly,
no relation at all, but I just thought it was funny.
Maybe you're gonna say Southpaw.
No. Well, yeah, okay, maybe that can be a new contribution to IMDb trivia.
The Star Wars page.
Yeah.
Beaut.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about the actual film?
I mean, have we talked about the score at all?
No, we haven't.
Because I thought the score was really well done. I thought the integration of the old themes was really, really nice and really subtle.
I got very excited to hear Gotta Fly Now, which
And
is
like,
always a good sign.
Exactly. And like the movie kind of, like they know what it means to hear that. And they know that you can't hear it too early. And well,
yeah, I think they honestly could have opened it and got people kind of warmed up, but it wouldn't it would get people kind of going. But the way that it was done, it was so much more effective.
Yeah, for sure. And it helps. Like, I mean, I think that the thing that this movie does the best that I think really sort of, I don't know, speaks to the sort of like this sort of idea that guides the whole movie is that it kind of knows when to hold back. And there's just sort of like there's an intelligence to it that I think doesn't exist in a lot of movies. And it's weird because it's just Creed is a simple, artfully done like Hollywood genre movie, you know? And it feels like there have been a lot more of those. Like specifically this year. Like I was thinking about it, like Danny Collins was a movie that wasn't very good, but had moments that were really good and like moments that seemed like movies that used to be made all the time 20 years ago, but now are just like weird fleeting moments. And like Everest is another example of that. Ricky and the Flash, The Night Before, and Trainwreck. These are all movies that I could think about that really reminded me of these movies that have moments of just real smart artfulness in them that I would have hated probably, or not hated, but, you know, not given as much credit 10 or 15 years ago, just because there were more of them. And now they seem more like outliers. And Creed, I think, really fits in with that, in that it's a really well done genre movie. And I really appreciate that artfulness. But the thing that Creed does best is that it knows how to hold back its big stuff, like the stuff that I think really elevates this movie. And the score is a really good example of that. Like, it makes the last round of that fight so much better. You know, like, and I've talked about, you know, I think that fight is kind of underwhelming given what comes before it. There are certainly nice moments throughout. And I think the like warming up scene before he walks out to the ring is really good. I think Conlon's intro into the ring is really good with the fire breather.
Yeah.
All that stuff's great. And then there's just, you know, when it tries to do more stylistic stuff, like the lights dimming around the ring and sort of those Raging Bull cutaways that happen a few times, like it just doesn't work quite as well for me. Just because, I don't know, they seem to come out of nowhere and they don't seem to be things that were always a part of the plan, you know? But like things like the score and when Donnie says that I'm not a mistake when he's in the corner in the last, like during the last fight, like that he's got to prove that he's not a mistake. And that line totally came out of nowhere for me, and like in a good way. And I really loved it, and I felt like it really summed up his whole character motivation. And when he's lying on the ground in that fight, and we see all these nice little quick cutaways of things that have disappointed him throughout, I thought that moment was really great. And I think it's specifically because they hold back throughout the movie on him pointing these things out that it really works, you know. And I
Yeah, I
thought it
mean,
was great.
him saying to prove I'm not a mistake could easily could have been a trailer moment and lost all gravity in the
Yeah.
movie, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because and like that, I mean, we haven't really talked about Michael B. Jordan a lot, but I mean, that's a very Friday Night Lightsy thing. Like, there's a specific moment in Friday Night Lights that is just like that, that totally caught me off guard, and I loved it for it. But yeah, I thought that was really great, and to put that in the middle of the fight is, I think, really great too. You know, and it's not even like he's yelling it either. It's just like he's just stating it. It's just a statement. He's not a mistake, you know.
Yeah. Did you think that they would end on the loss that way?
Like Rocky did?
Yeah. Well, even just in general. I mean, not just because it is the way that the first Rocky ended,
Oh,
but
like, well, the thing that I alluded to earlier about how as it gives into its legacy, it gets less interesting.
yeah.
For the first half of the movie, I would have believed anything was going to happen. I would have believed Rocky was going to die. I would have believed Donnie was going to get knocked out in the fourth round, you know, or knock somebody out in the fourth round. I felt like every card was in play, but as we're sort of leading up to the last fight, it sort of becomes more and more clear that it is going to end just like you expect it to now. You know, like it's not going to give you these things that you know, it's going to play into the Rocky mythos. He's going to lose the fight but win the night, to quote Jim Lampley.
Yeah.
You know, and that was part of what disappointed me about the ending. It's still quite good, but and I do really like the last scene of them going up the steps, but
Yeah, that's good.
yeah, I mean, I have nothing bad to say about it.
And again, holding
Well,
back
except
the
the
steps.
fade to black, but
Yeah. Again, holding back the steps thing till later than
yeah, for sure.
they needed to as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a really nice way to end the movie. I don't even remember the question. Oh, that are, yeah, I think it did take away a little bit of something for the movie that it ends in pretty much the same way.
Yeah, and I guess is this the idea that this really is like a kind of a harder reboot than it is just another one in the franchise, and that was such a good beginning, because that was such a good beginning to the Rocky series. By that I mean a good finish to that, was that, you know, it's not really just about winning, it's about you know, getting better. It's about what you take from your losses. It's about kind of, you know, proving to yourself that you're good enough. Maybe not the best, but you're good, and you've done something that a lot of people wouldn't be able to do given the position. And do you think that that was just that function as such a good, you know, jumping off point for the rest of the Rocky movies, and that was a good way, because there's still room to go up for Creed
Yeah,
II,
for sure.
assuming he becomes a champ. But you know, now you don't want to do that even, because that seems so formulaic.
Yeah.
I'm just very curious to see where this is going to go, and it's going to go somewhere, because critics loved it, and it made back its, you know, budget the like second night it was out.
Yeah.
And Michael B. Jordan seems to have a very bright future ahead of him in acting.
Because he's good at it.
Well, because he's good at it,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah, I'm just curious to see, you know, we've kind of been saying the original Rocky is so good, this movie is so good, they're both extremely similar to each other. I'll be curious to see where they kind of start taking deviations. And the one, I think one of the big balls to juggle is Rocky. you know, mm-hmm. what do we do with Rocky Balboa? Mm-hmm. Does Sly let him kind of be killed off mm-hmm. on his own terms in one before he dies in between the filming of movies and doesn't really really have a permanent stay on his legacy? Because this franchise is what Sly gets remembered for. It's not that we're going to forget everything else about his career, yeah. but it's just so far and above just because he wrote it, because he had so much to do with the first one, because it was such a underdog story that became an underdog story in itself, mm-hmm. That it's the thing that spanned his entire career the way that it has. I'll just be in because it is something that's always had to do with legacy from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I'll be very curious to see what they do as the series progresses, because I'm curious to see what they do with Creed, but I'm also very interested to see what Sly and Rocky kind of choose to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I think at this point Sly would be more open to I think he really believes in Coogler and my boy MBJ as well, like in that like he just sort of trusts them in a way that, you know, he certainly didn't up front. Like, he didn't want to do this movie initially. He didn't want it to be made. He felt that Rocky Balboa was the right ending for the character. You know, he felt like he was finally done with it. But now I think he kind of understands that it's kind of interesting to put him as Mickey, and it both extends the life of the character, even if they kill him, you know, in the next movie. And just extends Sly's own legacy, you know. And I think he's sort of getting to a point in his life. I mean, Sly's always been smarter than people give him credit for.
Than he sounds.
Well, yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's always been true, even when he was an idiot in the 80s, you know. He was still a smart idiot, you know. But, like, I think he's smart enough to understand that it's better to let go of the franchise and let somebody that, you know, assuming Ryan Coogler is attached to the sequel, he's good at making like well-made Hollywood movies. Like Fruitvale Station was the same thing. Like I didn't like it as much as most people did, but it was certainly well-made and had a style to it that, you know, a skill level to it that a lot of directors simply lack, you know? And I think also the fact that he's 29, he's going to get so much better, you know?
Yeah.
So I think Sly's smart enough to understand that, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me because it's so on its way. I mean, it's just because of the success critically and financially. If Sly were to die in between and they made another one, I don't think people would scoff at it. You know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. clear it has its blessing and it was kind of in motion before this. Mm-hmm. I would love to see him in another one because I think he's really good in this too.
Oh,
like, not just funny, but he's
good in this
very
movie.
Good in this movie, which I think we actually haven't even really said yet.
We have not talked about my favorite scene in this movie, which is like, again, I was talking about scenes that moments that catch me off guard. When he gets his diagnosis and just like accepts his pending demise, like I was emotionally unprepared for that scene, and he's so good in it, and I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah,
you know, like Rocky's not gonna fight and all this stuff, and I thought it was so fascinating that one, he was willing to do that, you know, Sly Stallone was willing to do that, and I mean, he's so good in that scene. And like, just the way he plays it is so understated, and he doesn't like start bawling, but he also isn't afraid to cry, and he just sort of takes off his hat just to do something.
Yeah, you know? I was gonna say the fact that a hat removal got me as well as it did, I think says something.
It's so good. Like, that scene is so good, and Stallone is so good in it, and you know, there's a reason there's a 30-second hold from the camera on his face while he's doing that little speech. You know, it's just like, because there's just nothing better to show right now. You know,
yeah, no, for sure.
That and the follow-up scene where he talks about, if I could take all in life that was good and like put it in a bowl, like, and it's also good because it's just a clumsy way of saying those things, which is very Rocky. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
So yeah, he's very good in this movie, yeah. And also I think understands that. these, like specifically these scenes, have also helped help the way that he is now seen publicly. I think anybody that sees this movie, nobody's coming out of it being like, "Oh, Stallone's such an idiot," you know? Like, come on,
Oscar.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, just because of the way Hollywood likes rewarding legacy and stuff, and also comeback story.
Plus, it's actually a good performance.
Yeah, well, also that. Yeah, I don't know. I would imagine there's a supporting performance by the end of the year I like better. But I mean, it, like, this movie winning awards, like, isn't a bad thing, you know? Because I think it's a good movie, and I think the people involved with it are all pretty talented. Director Michael B. Jordan, Tessa Thompson, who plays Bianca, I think they're all quite good, and I want them to be able to do whatever they need to do, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And also, I mean, we talked about future sequels, I think, and the formula of the Rocky series. I think Coogler is also smart enough to not do like Rocky or Creed stops the Cold War sort of thing, you know? Like, I think that if he continues on with the series, it's going to be because he's going to be able to stretch his legs a little bit more, and he'll still, because he still has these very commercial sort of, you know, at his heart, he's still a pretty commercial Hollywood director. But I think he does it in a way that is, there's an intelligence to it that I think will save at least his future installments of these Creed movies from falling into the abyss of Rocky 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah. So. Yes.
So, yeah, thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Man, and be sure to check back for our next episode.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.